Welcome to
Ray and Tay Today, talking sports with friends.
Ray and Tay Today.
Sports radio on the dial. Check us out.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. You're listening to Ray and Tay Today, and I'm Ray, Saul Rayside.
And I'm Tay, Eric Taylor. And if you want to listen, give us a call, 718-664-9098. We got a great show. Like always, email us at rayandtaytoday@gmail.com. It was a busy sports weekend. Ray, let them know what we're talking about. It's some football, baby. Woo!
Oh, boy, we got a lot to talk about. So we're going to jump right in with a special guest, Randall Cunningham, four-time Pro Bowler, super dynamic quarterback in the 80s and the 90s. And if you're too young, go back to the archives. This guy's worth watching, believe me. So we're going to talk all things football, life before, during, and after football. Then after Randall joins us, we'll be giving you our draft recap. So we talked about the first round on Friday. We'll talk about the whole draft from start to finish today. And then at the end of the show, we'll talk about these NBA playoffs. Some of the series are heating up. We're in the conference semis. So we've got a couple of series tied at 2-2. And, of course, we'll have to address this Sterling saga, which probably won't go away for a while. But got a lot to talk about. What's on your mind, Tay? What are you thinking? How are your juices flowing?
Listen, this was exciting. It's all about the NFL. It's all about Randall Cunningham. I'm hyped up. And, you know, I think this draft was amazing. We said it might be the deepest draft in 20 years, and it turned out to be real reality television.
Hold on,
totally
we got
excited.
A caller. Let's see. Caller, you're on the air with Ray and Tay.
Hey, guys. Mike in Pittsburgh. How you guys been?
Hey, Mike. How
hey,
you doing?
Mike.
Let me welcome you to the show. It's been a while. Listen,
yeah.
We might have to drop you.
Let's
when
put
Ram
you on hold.
Calls.
We got our guest with us.
Well, guys, you guys have the perfect guest and the perfect question. I wanted you to run by Randall Cunningham.
All right. Shoot it out.
I'll get it to you quick in case he comes up. He's a preacher. He's been in religion. It's been a big part of his life. Now, as far as Michael Sam, a lot of religions, you know, don't think, you know, homosexuality, they don't hold in high regards or actually say it's wrong. As him being an ex-football player, an ex-athlete, does he have to kind of accept this and change his views because the media is so adamant against anyone now against being gay? Does he almost have to go against his beliefs?
Yeah, you know, Mike, I don't know. I mean,
all right, hold on. We're gonna get. Thanks for the call, Mike. We'll get back to you. We're gonna get Randall. We're gonna punch Randall in. We got a bunch of questions for him.
Can you guys Can you guys keep me on the line so I can listen in?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Here we go.
All right, let's talk to our guest.
Hey.
Hi, Randall. How are you? Welcome to Ray and Tay Today. I'm Ray.
Right on, Ray.
How you doing?
Appreciate you guys. Good, man. I'm doing good. Appreciate you guys.
How you doing, Randall? I'm Tay, Eric Taylor, and we're just glad to have you join us, and we're very excited. Randall, I want to jump right into it.
Okay.
We just had the NFL draft this weekend, and for these young quarterbacks and a lot of these young players, why don't you tell us, number one, your draft experience, obviously in 85, coming out of UNLV, second-round pick. I don't know if you were, you know, if Mel Kiper or any of those, you know, experts were projecting you in the first round. But why don't you tell our audience about your draft experience, the phone call, and then what it is when you first get to a camp that you're not a college student, you're a professional.
Yeah. Well, the whole lifelong goal is to get there and to say I made it and then to bless your family, take out your family. My goal was very simple. I just wanted to work hard and dedicate myself and do the best I could. The day that I was drafted, I sat around. They saying I would be drafted between the first and the second round, and I just got so antsy, and there was a reporter with me, that I didn't stop watching the draft. Once they got to the end of the first round, I walked out of my house and went shopping, you know, just to relax because it was nerve-wracking. And I went to the mall, and when I came back from the mall, you know, back in the day, you had answering machines that you go in your house and check in 85.
Oh, yeah.
And I went into my house, as I was going in, my neighbor who played with me at UNLV said, "You got drafted by the Eagles in the second round. You're the 39th pick overall." I said, "Stop playing around." He said, "You did. Go check your answer machine." So I went and checked, and they said, "This is Lynn Stiles of the Philadelphia Eagles, Randall. We just drafted you, first quarterback in the NFL draft, and we're happy to have you." And I had signed previously with the Tampa Bay Bandits USFL team, a $4 million contract behind the scenes. And if I didn't get drafted, I was going to take that contract to play in the USFL. And it turns out that they flew me in, and I was excited my first year. You know, I just wanted to go in there and focus, and I knew I had a lot of studying to do. And, you know, all the hazing and all that stuff started. So it was difficult the first year. It really was.
Wow, that's really fascinating. And we've got a lot of listeners from the Eagle fans, the Viking fans listening in, you know, that really followed you and loved your career and, you know, ready to beat the table for you, you know, to be in the Hall of Fame. So I wanted to ask you this, Randall. I mean, obviously, you know, everyone knows your career and your experience. I guess the question is, what was your favorite team as a player? Obviously, you know, we know about 89 with the Eagles, and you had great years with them. But that 98 team with the Vikings, where it was, you know, just – and I'm a Steelers fan, so when Gary Anderson missed the field goal, it broke my heart. But, I mean, those two sort of juxtaposed positions, those two teams, just give us a little insight to, you know, obviously, you know, maybe you don't have a favorite, but your thoughts on those two teams and your experiences in both places. And if you do have a favorite, you know, you could give us the insight and let us
know.
But I'm sort of fascinated about
– You know, I spent a lot of my life in Philadelphia, and there are a lot of people who did great things for me in Philadelphia. The Falks, Charlie Falk over at ran the dealerships, and he was like a father figure to me there, and then all the coaching staff, the four coaching staff, the two owners, the community, and I just really tried to sew in there. So Philadelphia is really, it's really my home, and what I wanted in my career was fulfilled pretty much there to a certain extent. I love playing in Minnesota. I love the people of Minnesota. The people in Minnesota, they allow you to live your life, and they kind of will say, "Hey," but they don't walk up to you and smack you on the shoulder, you know, and say, "Hey, sign this autograph." You know, I was accustomed to the Philly people are in your face. They love you. They're a part of your life. And it was a little different in Minnesota. Dallas, you know, I had great expectations. You know, America's team, and didn't really get to play a lot. And then finally in Baltimore, I played, but I was, you know, riding the bench behind Elvis Gerback and, you know, hoping to go to the Super Bowl. We missed it by two games, so kind of ended it up that way. But, you know, I love the Philadelphia Eagle people.
Yeah, you, Randall, I got to tell you, you gave us a lot of excitement. I was a Cowboy fan growing up, and, you know, you made those Cowboy-Eagles games and all of those Eagles games very exciting for me. Let me ask you something about today's quarterbacks and the quarterback position. So what do you think about the evolution of the quarterback position? And do you feel you were ahead of your time in some ways? The NFL didn't know what to do with Randall Cunningham. And how would you do in today's NFL?
Well, you know, I think that I came in an era where the end of we're not drafting a black quarterback kind of ended. And it was accepted once, you know, Warren Moon and myself and some of the other players were able to play. And, you know, it's possible that they didn't know how to maneuver and use some of the offensive coordinators. As a matter of fact, I love all the coaching staff, but even my last year there, John Gruden came in and he confessed it was his system, it was going to make it work, and I got benched in that West Coast offense to sit out, go to the Minnesota Vikings, get with Brian Billick, who knew me and created a different player in me where I was sitting in the pocket, and I became the MVP of the league for the third time. So, you know, some people knew how, and some people were saying, you know what, this system's work, I'm not going to adjust my system to a player. And it was different back then, but I loved it, enjoyed every moment of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you about back to the beginning of your career with the Eagles. So you joined in 85, and also coming from the USFL, the late, great Reggie White joined also. Now, he was also a man of strong faith and a teammate of yours, obviously on the other side of the ball. But what do you remember about those first few years in Philly and also the impact that Reggie had on the Eagles and maybe on you and the rest of his colleagues in the NFL?
You know, without Reggie White being a great member and a leader of the Philadelphia Eagles, there would have been a lot of guys that we wouldn't have stayed together because we developed a unity with the combination of Buddy Ryan, Reggie White, Norman Braman, you know, and the coaching staff that we had, and, you know, everybody in the organization, Otto Davis, a lot of people, we were able to do great things based on us loving each other. And even though, I mean, it was a love-hate relationship. One day, a guy might be your best friend. The next day, he might be upset at you. But the next day, we're back to normal. And Reggie brought a lot of that together by telling us about God.
Okay, great. Wow. Sports is a lot like family.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah.
So, you know, I want to piggyback on that. I mean, I guess for me, I feel that the black quarterback, Randall, it has totally changed, so much so that, you know, and I don't know if you remember during the Super Bowl, no one really mentioned Russell Wilson being African American until sort of afterwards, and him and Doug Williams being the only two quarterbacks that have, you know, won the Super Bowl. But for me, what would you advise in terms of, you know, it's different. When you're a quarterback, you're the leader of an organization or franchise. So these young guys coming in, whether it's a Teddy Bridgewater, you know, maybe a Taj Boyd trying to get on with the Jets, and even Cam and Kaepernick and Russell and RG3, you know, if we had, like, you know, and I'd love to do this, have, like, a black quarterback summit, and everybody sit down and just share, you know, what would you tell these guys, you know, and especially like a Geno Smith, you know, he's got to compete and keep his job. How would you advise them to sort of run the position, but at the same time do it, you know, as an African-American? Or do you feel that there's no difference at all and they just have to focus on being a quarterback?
Well, I think that I think the gifts nowadays, they've been spoken to, and they're very professional, or they wouldn't have even made it in college. So these young men, whether they're African American or Jewish or, you know, mixed, there are a lot of people who are mixed, and a lot of people don't realize this, but if you look up history, you'll find out that just about everybody in the world is mixed up and has some type of African in them, but it just not show
exactly,
as far as color is concerned. You know, my thing is, I don't think we need a symposium or a summit or, you know, anything like that. I just think that these kids nowadays are a whole nother level. And I think what needs to happen is the coaches need to adjust and grow with them and understand where they come from and what they fought through. And I think the respect factor is a big part of it. When we look back to what happened with RG3, with Shanahan in Washington, that thing got way out of hand. And,
right.
I think that it settled itself, but people on the outside could see what was really going on. Evidently, this man didn't want this quarterback as his quarterback. He benched him, saying he was trying to save him, trying to make the other quarterback look good. People aren't stupid nowadays. And I think that we just have to keep getting away from racism or prejudice or whatever it is and just let people be people. You know, this is a free world. We're the land of liberty. And we just need to let, I don't care if it's an Asian or a Hispanic or whatever, everybody needs equal rights. And I think that if we do that, it'll be fine.
So,
yeah, that's
well,
great.
To jump on that, would you say that, you know, obviously, you know, would you say, I guess, you know, one of our callers had called in, would you say the same thing for Michael Sam, who was drafted by the Rams?
You know, the problem with that is everybody's judgmental, you know.
Right.
And I'm a pastor. You know, and my take is, hate the sin, love the person. So I love
right.
Michael Sam. I want to see this brother do great. I want to see him make it. You know, is the NFL ready for that is really the question, and it's an individual base, person-by-person basis. Evidently, the teams in the NFL were not willing to take that risk because the kid, I think he's a great player. I think he has all the ability. But, I mean, some people can't handle, you know, him kissing on television, and it just doesn't settle right. And then it gets into morals and what do people want to teach their children. So you have a lot of opinionated people. Everybody deserves a chance, without a doubt. And there's probably other players in different leagues or wherever. And, you know, football is a little bit different. Sports is a little bit different. You know, you go in a locker room, you have to shower with one another, and, you know, you think about things and you think about a person who's dealing with issues like that. It does involve and it does affect a team. And I mean, he was a strong man to come out and say that. But as a pastor, you know, I pray for him and I hope that he does well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, no,
Randall, let me ask you this. Now, we talk about this is a sports show, but also sports is part of life. So tell us a little bit about your work as a pastor in Las Vegas, how you've been committed to that profession now for quite a few years. And also tell us about, for all the sports fans out there, how is leading a congregation, and what are some of the lessons you learned leading men in the NFL and being a quarterback, which is a, you know, a leadership position. So tell us some of the lessons that, that helped you, you know, help you in football, help you in your life as a pastor and vice versa.
Being a pastor is a whole lot harder than being a football player right now.
Amen. I know that's right.
I mean, you know, in the football field, I mean, you can go to practice and you can leave. You don't have to deal with people. I could hide out at my house, you know, and just, but, you know, as a pastor, I have to be in people's lives. I have to be available for people, and that's what I am. And this whole experience with the NFL of going through the hard knocks of it and fans coming up and it being uncomfortable and not knowing people and being able to, hey, how you doing? A guy smacking me on the shoulder. Hey, Kanye, I'm a big fan. Sign this while I'm eating or I'm asleep on the, in first class on the plane. You know, they could close the curtains and say, let the man sleep. But as a pastor, I just have to love on people and continually know that my life is no longer my life, but it's the life of Christ. And I love that. And here at Remnant Ministries, we have people who come here and visit from all over the world. I mean, people who are were football fans, people who are celebrities. Morris Day was just in church, you know, here yesterday. I mean, Richard Steele, professional boxer, Jonathan Ogden, I mean, Dick Dickerson. A lot of the professional athletes and entertainers have come to our church. I mean, TV stars, they come. Whenever they're in town, they say, Rand, I'm coming to your church. And Earl Campbell just came in, and nice. I had to remind him of the time that I was playing. I think he was with the Saints, and I stunk the game up and got benched. And he came up to me after the game, and he says, Randall, don't lose your faith, brother. You're going to be a great quarterback in the NFL. And he prophesied that. And I saw him when I was at the pool pit sitting in the back, and he came up looking good, too, and he's doing business, and he says, whenever I come to town, I'm coming. This is my church when I come to town. And I said, you don't remember the time that you encouraged me, because I was in the tank that day that you just hugged me and put your hand on my shoulder and said, brother, keep it up. It's going to be all right. And that catapulted my career. So the influence that people have had in my life is still happening today, and I really thank God for it, because there's been so many fans that have supported me and even prayed behind the scenes for me that I may never even get to meet.
That's great.
That's amazing. And, you know, we're big fans of, you know, the NFL and, you know, saw Earl Campbell and your story on A Football Life and, you know, thought those were just fascinating stories. And so I want to ask you this, because I know this is near and dear to your heart. And actually, Rand, I also want to thank our friend Derek Chapman, Chappie, my good friend that I went to college with, you know, for connecting us. And he's, you know, a great brother.
Yeah.
Who speaks so fondly of you. So I'd like to, you know, say that. But I also want to know about your son. You know, I've seen stories and heard things about RC2 potentially being a quarterback. He thought about Baylor. But now he is an extreme, amazing track star at USC. Tell us about your son's journey and what that is as a father to, you know, I'm a father of four boys. So I can only imagine.
Yeah.
But just give us some insight to how your son is doing and his choice of profession.
Well, you know, it all goes back to, you know, you finally finding the wife that God had brought me. You know, the Bible says the man who finds a wife finds a good thing and finds favor in the Lord.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we have six kids, and Randall's the oldest out of everyone. And he's just a humble kid. He's a leader. He loves mankind. He loves his friends. And he's a hard worker. All they work very, very hard. And it's kind of like I gave them the option. But I've encouraged them and showed them that this is the way we do things as a Cunningham family. It was handed down from my parents, my brother Sam, who played in the NFL, and I said, this is how we work. And yesterday we were walking. He's a high jumper. He'd been ranked number one in the country all year. And a kid just – my son went 7'2", and a kid just went 7'2 and a quarter. And I told him that somebody would try to jump a half an inch or a quarter over his head. But this weekend, he said, Dad, I want to jump 7'6" this weekend. He says, I'm going to go 7'4", 7'5", and 7'6". And that will qualify him for the Olympics in 2016, I believe it is. But he's a determined kid. You know, I looked at him yesterday, and I stood next to him, and he's 18 years old. He's still in high school, about to graduate. And he said, Dad, I'm way taller than you. And I tried to stand taller, and he was still 2 inches taller than me. So he's like probably 6'6", 6'7".
Wow.
And you know, they wanted him to play football. Everybody was offering him scholarships to play football. He did not want to go to Baylor. He made that very clear to me. So, you know, it was kind of like he didn't want to go there. But, you know, he's always been an Oregon fan. But people were saying, we're going to need you to gain weight. And to high jump, he was the best in the world last year at 17 and under. And to high jump, you can't weigh 210, 215 pounds. You've got to be like 180, maybe 185 pounds. So he knows that. So he made the decision that he would take a full ride scholarship to USC to run track. And it's close to home. And then my daughter Vashti is 16 years old, and she's ranked number one in the world right now. She's jumped 6'2". She's only a sophomore in high school. And
wow.
She hasn't peaked out yet, but she's like number one in the world for, I believe it's under 17 or 18 and under. And she's doing a great, great job. And she works hard too. And like I said, she's only a sophomore. They both attend Bishop Gorman High School. And she's really considering, you know, where she would go in college, whether she'd go to USC or whether she'd go to Arizona or Oregon or UCLA or one of the other schools. But great, great kids. I thank God for them. They're humble.
That's fantastic. You know, I was just thinking the Foxbury flop wasn't made for football players, right?
the West would have been better back today.
That's great. Yeah. So, Randall, this has been so much fun for us. I hope we can have you back on the show. Let me ask you one last question about just as an ex-football player, when you look at the NFL these days, what do you think? What comes to mind for you as somebody who's played and played at an elite level? How do you like the state of the NFL right now, and what, if anything, would you change in the game?
Well, I love what's going on. They're protecting the quarterbacks nowadays.
Oh, yeah, with the ankle
and
the knee
for
you.
You would
love that, yeah.
You throw for 4,000 or 5,000 yards now where you don't have guys hitting you on your knees and watching out in the pocket. The guys are bigger, stronger. I think the commissioner, Roger Goodell, is doing a great job. I love how he hugs those guys when they go up in the draft number one, and he cries with them, and he lets them know, guys, I love you guys. And I think that that's the biggest thing in the NFL is that when you enter the NFL and you know somebody really sincerely cares, rather than you just go into a team and you just become another number, and if you don't do your job, you're done.
Right.
I think he is such a pivotal point in the NFL owners. Hiring him has really done major work for the NFL. The guys aren't in trouble as much as they used to be, and, you know, they're able to tolerate guys who might be bipolar or whatever it may be and help them out rather than just throw them under the bus nowadays. So it's great, and I think this whole concussion thing is getting worked out, and just continually pray that, you know, they keep opening the door for everybody to be able to play in the league.
Definitely. So, Randall, one last one for me before we let you go, and we appreciate your time and, you know that you're very busy and look forward to getting down to Vegas to come visit your church. That will be very exciting. Hopefully I can bring my family with me. But I want to ask you this. Thank you. Who today plays quarterback like Randall Cunningham?
Oh, my God. These guys are a whole lot better than me nowadays.
No, Ray. You're being humble, Ray. Listen, Ray was a Cowboy fan. I grew up in New York. We both grew up on 95th Street. I like Jets, Giants, but I'm a Steeler fan. And I got to tell you, you made America, and you made a lot of young men, not just African-American, but, you know, like, you know, Tiles, Jewish, you know, Irish, whoever it was, Randall. You made players. You made people become Eagle fans. You know what I mean? You were Twitter when you played. You know what I mean? So I got to give you that respect. But come on, tell us, who do you think today plays like Randall?
If I were to go on a limb and say who I feel is the up and coming athletic guy in the league, I think I'd have to go with a Cam Newton. I'd have to go with our guy with the 49ers, of course, Kaepernick. Love that kid. Vic, I could see Vic towards the end of his career with another 2 or 3 years, solid years left if they put him in the right system. And then RG3, guy's ridiculous. RG3 needs to take care of his body, though. You know, like people, when I play, you know, that's why I jumped in the air. I wasn't trying to get hit solid, so I would go up in the air and land kind of like a cat. I think those kids are so, so talented. And my boy from Louisville just got drafted with the Minnesota Vikings. Oh, my God, Teddy.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I can't wait for him and Taj. And I'm happy for the kid that went to Jacksonville out of Florida. He's staying home. He's going to – His smile was so big, and you could say it wasn't I made it, but it's like I get to keep playing is his heart. And let me tell you something. When you have a kid like that – it's those kids who don't win the Heisman Trophy who end up being great, great players who are so hungry. And, you know, it's not like, well, I'm the Heisman Trophy candidate, and nothing against our Florida State kid, but it's like I've got so much to accomplish. And these kids
exactly.
are being drafted. I'm so happy for them. And it's kind of like I'm not knowing all the names anymore, but I'm happy for
right.
all of them. And I think that they're going to – I just wish that they would get together and sow a seed in the church out here.
Well, listen, Randall, as we let you go, please tell our audience again, give us the website, let us know where your church is. You know, if you have multiple services on Sunday, I know it's a non-denominational church, but just, again, give us all the information so our listeners, and please let everybody
know
that it's really
you
on Twitter, at Pastor Randall C. It is you.
No, that's I'm really simple. If you go on the Internet, go Google search engine and pull up Randall Cunningham Church, you'll find out where we're at, and it's Remnant Ministries Church International in Las Vegas, Nevada. We accept everybody, you know. We don't discriminate or anything like that. We love everybody.
Right.
That's kind of the basis of our church. And what I've heard a lot is that when people come, they're kind of like saying, okay, this guy was a football player. And then they find out that as soon as they walk through the door, there are people greeting them and loving on them and people are hugging. And it's just an atmosphere that you want to be in. And so we haven't even promoted our church, and we have about 1,100 people in it. And we've been here, about 8 years, and we just really believe that if you love the community, and, you know, we're in Sin City, we've got a lot of issues going on here.
Right.
If you love people and you encourage them and build them up and really do it sincerely, then we can be busy in the highways and the byways of life and lead people to healings and forgiveness and lead them to the God who loves them, the one who created them. And so that's what we do. You know, it's not about me being a professional football player or anything like that. It's about me getting up front and having a great worship service with a great worship team and praying and having an hour and 15-minute service where we basically teach the Bible. And people receive it, they hear it, and I say, hey, love you guys. See you next week.
That's great. Well,
great,
listen,
Randall.
Tell your wife, Felicity, correct? Please tell her thank you so much. Letting us steal you away for a couple of minutes.
I know she's a blessing to the church as well.
Let you guys
know that old Pastor Steve, he stayed on me about this interview too, okay?
All right.
Well, thank you, Randall.
You
we appreciate it.
Uh-huh. God bless
you. It's been our pleasure.
Thank you, Randall. Take care. God bless you, too. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the great Randall Cunningham. Man, you talk about a quarterback, Ray, and you said it. As a Cowboy fan, you had to root for Randall, and that was fun. That was just a great interview. So let's jump on what he said, and let's talk about this draft, and, you know, in reviewing it, What did you think about these quarterbacks? 14 quarterbacks were taken. Manziel had to wait to 22. Bortles, you know, who might get the keys to the car week 8 or whatever with Jacksonville, gets to stay home, like Randall said. And then at the end of the first round, which we reviewed on Friday, Bridgewater goes to the Vikings. What team and which quarterback? I mean, because we've got Murray to the Chiefs. We've got A.J. McCarron, who had to wait forever, to the Bengals, and Mettenberger to the Titans. Which team found the right quarterback for them? What do you think?
So, you know, I love the Cleveland Browns picking up Johnny Manziel, especially.
You predicted it two months ago. Everybody give Ray some props.
I thought they'd take him at 4, but great GMing by Ray Farmer to get him later in the first round, get that pick by the Bills, next year's number 1 from the Bills. So I really think that Johnny Manziel is going to do big things in Cleveland. My only concern now is the wide receiver position, especially if Josh Gordon ends up being suspended. So they signed
right.
a bunch of free agent wide receivers,
yeah,
but I don't know.
Yeah.
In retrospect,
hopefully they can make it, right?
In retrospect, though, listen to this. They could have had Sammy Watkins and Johnny Manziel.
I know.
They wouldn't have had next year's number 1 from the Buffalo Bills, but if they just stuck to Sammy at 4, then they may have still been able to get Johnny in the late first.
But you know what?
You've
got
to
stop quarterbacks in this league and give them credit. I think having Hayden and Gilbert potentially 2 shutdown corners, and he's a big athletic kid at 6'1", Justin Gilbert. So, you know, I got to give them some credit with that, too, because they're building a team. And I think Mike Pettine, the coach, I think that's good. They also brought in Connor Shaw as a backup. The 2 receivers, Chandler Jones from San Jose State, who, you know, was really explosive with, the David Fales kid, and then Willie Sneed, who's the all-time passing receiver, broke all the records at Ball State. So maybe the Browns, maybe they got some gems.
Yeah, well, let me ask you this on a team basis. What team stood out to you as being good or even bad when you wrap up the NFL draft? So who's your winner?
I'll go negative. I think, you know, not too many picks, but I think the Colts, I don't know. They got a guard at 57. You know, I think they picked up a corner. I think, look, their first-round pick is Trent Richardson, right, since they made that deal. And, you know, he – I don't even know if he'll be able to continue being a starter the way he had been playing. But hopefully that works out. So I'm not impressed with the Colts. But on the positive side, I think so many teams did well. The local teams, Jets, Giants, Cardinals, you know, for where we're located in New York and Scottsdale. I think the Steelers did great, the Ravens. I really enjoyed the Texans getting Tom Savage and thought they built up their defensive line and did really well. The Jaguars, Browns, Vikings did great. So it's going to be fascinating to see, but definitely the Rams. And I think look, there might be 8 guys in a rotation for Michael Sam, and we'll talk on him a little bit more, but you know, to make the defensive line room. But I think the Rams, they in free agency, signed up 2 receivers, which I think they needed to do. Maybe they'll make the team, maybe they don't. But I like their draft choices, and I think the Rams, you know, getting a Donald and getting the big guy Greg Robinson, you know, that's and some secondary guys, that's a draft for the trenches. And I think the Texans did the same. You got to build your team inside out. That's what Belichick always says. So.
I like just to throw a couple more in the mix. I like what the Baltimore Ravens did to come out of the draft with C.J. Mosley and also Timmy Jernigan. In your first couple picks is pretty nice. They pick up a safety, Brooks the safety. He may start. So these guys in the first few rounds did really nicely. I like, even though they were situated towards the end of every round, I like what the Bengals did to get Dennard at 24, who you and I both thought would be top 10, 12, 15. To get him at 24 is fantastic. And then they pick up Jeremy Hill because Ben Jarvis Green-Ellis might be on his way out in a year or so. So that's
well, and don't forget the Niners getting Carlos Hyde, and oof, which is something I predicted on Twitter with these guys arguing 2-3 months ago. I think the Niners, with all their draft picks, did some great maneuvering. And a sleeper is that Bruce Ellington, the wide receiver, played point guard, you know, college basketball in college. Getting Bruce Ellington and the Broncos even getting Cody Latimer, who we thought could be a first-round pick, getting him at like 54 is a huge steal. It's amazing. I think that some teams really, and the good teams, you know, Seattle, you know, got some beef and got some size. You know, these guys building up their team, it's going to make – and we'll have to – maybe we'll – you know, we don't normally do it, but we might have to do a little early power rankings or something, you know, because I'm ready for football.
Juice is
I'm hyped up. I'm ready. I know you – I'm like, I'm ready for the NFL to start now. So let me ask you this. Let's look at Michael Sam. Your thoughts, obviously, you know, his chances to make the team. We saw history, number 249. It's going to be historic. Maybe other athletes or other football players, you know, might come out. What are your thoughts about that? And did you feel like no one was going to take him? And I felt the emotion. I thought it was touching when the kid was finally picked at 249.
When you got to the 7th round of the NFL draft and he wasn't taken, I was very worried that he wouldn't be taken for his sake, although he would have gotten a phone call from many teams, I think. From maybe 5 to 10 teams, you know, right after the draft. So I still come back to this dichotomy. We say, and without question, because there's 7 out of the last 8 years, the SEC champion, or the SEC has produced the national champion. Sometimes it's an SEC playing team playing another SEC team. So the SEC is leaps and bounds ahead of any other conference in college football. So you're telling me, again, let's review the facts, that the co-defensive player of the year, where the other defensive player of the year was C.J. Mosley, and he's a top 10 pick, you're trying to tell me the other defensive player of the year has to wait until the 7th round to get drafted? This is the best conference in college football. This guy was the best defensive player. Tied for the
best defensive
player in that conference.
You know,
the There's some issues with his position in terms of linebacker versus, pass rushing defensive
end. Right, his size, a tweener.
And his size. I get it. I get all that. But even with all of that, you got to give the SEC Defensive Player of the Year a chance, right? Whether it's the third round, the fourth round, the fifth round. I thought he was going to be drafted somewhere in there and not have to wait till the seventh round. So I don't know if this was risk management or people didn't want to deal with the PR stunt. He went to St. Louis, which is good, right? Columbia, Missouri is not too far away. So
right, stays local.
Yeah, stays local. He have a lot of hometown folks from Missouri representing in the state. So good for him. I really hope that he does well because first and foremost, you know, putting all the sexual orientation issues, he's a good football player. And I like to see him succeed just because he's a good football player. And now add to the fact that, you know, he was pretty brave and came out, even though he had come out to his team earlier, but he came out to the world. So I'm really rooting for this kid. I hope he does well, and I hope he succeeds. And I hope that the St. Louis Rams benefit from taking this player because I think, again, he's a good football player and he looks to be a good kid.
I have to agree with all that. I think he's going to find a way to make the team. The NFL – here's some stats for you. We talked about 14 quarterbacks, 33 wide receivers, record-setting 53 defensive backs, corners and safeties were taken. This is a passing league. The running backs, it was an all-time low, right? A running back was not drafted, and it was Bishop Sankey by the Titans, to number 54. So this tells you we have gone to the passing era, which, oh, gosh, Randall would have loved to play in this day and age. I think any quarterback would. So with all that being said, a pass rusher, even if he's situational, look at the Seahawks, the championship team. They rotate their defensive linemen so they're all fresh and could get to the quarterback like they did in the Super Bowl to disrupt Peyton Manning. So having a Michael Sam along with Quinn and Long, and, you got to worry about his health and all the defensive guys, Donald, and, everybody that's on that team, the Lions do it too. You need a rotation. And I think he'll make the squad, and I think a lot of they drafted, 11 guys? Rams and Niners had a lot of guys, Patriots, Jets. So I wish the kid well, and I think he's going to make it. I want to ask you, though, about the Giants, man. I like some of their picks. What do you think about Odell Beckham, and do you think, Eli got enough help to keep him upright but also to, throw it down the field?
It's funny. I would not have drafted Odell Beckham, but the Giants obviously did, and they went with the Peyton Manning theory of just get our guy some weapons. They lost Akeem Nicks, and you and I both spoke off air about Randall, and we think that Randall's a good player, and he could definitely step into that number 1A/2 receiver with Victor Cruz.
Right, LSU, Reuben Randall, big guy, yeah.
I thought that they would take Ebron if he was there, but obviously he wasn't. So Jerry Reese went out and drafted a wide receiver, probably the best wide receiver on the board for his guy. And, in retrospect, I didn't love it on Friday. It's growing on me. It's growing on me. I think if you have Eli Manning for the next 2, 3, 4 years, which the Giants, inevitably will have to sign him. I mean, I'm not a huge Eli fan, but they're going to have to sign him, and he'll probably retire a Giant. You got to give him tools. So it was either going to be a tight end or a wide receiver as your impact offensive player. I didn't know that you had to get him in the first round. They did address some concerns on the offensive line, so that's good. They took a defensive tackle from Boston College. They took your boy Andre Williams from BC. They have some question marks at the running back position. So I think overall the Giants had an okay draft. I can't say that I'm in love with their draft. I think the Giants and the Jets did okay. Not outstanding.
About our Redskins fans? Did you think they reached a little bit for Trent Murphy? They kind of traded down a little bit. They got some offensive line help for RG3. But Trent Murphy, they kind of snatched up in the second round. Some people, maybe had him at a third, fourth round grade out of Stanford.
Well, people say he's got
a lot of potential.
And yeah, you're right, though. When you give up all those picks to go get yourself RG3, that means that you need to be pinpoint with your drafting. And I'm not sure they were pinpoint with Trent Murphy where they got him, but you know what? He's a good football player, so maybe they drafted him a little too early. I do love the fact that, and both you and I had this guy going in the first round, but I do love the fact that for the Washington Redskins, and for all you Redskins fans out there, Morgan Moses fell to them. I think that to get this kid from Virginia, you know, hometown, very close, I love that. I love that pick. And then they ended up getting Spencer Long, the guard from Nebraska. So those two linemen in the third round, I think that's very nice. So even if Trent Murphy was a little bit of a reach, I think that reinforcing that offensive line, because at the end of the day, look, you're only going to go as far as RG3 takes you, so you got to keep him upright. They got him some tools, especially at the tight end, wide receiver, Alfred Morris. You know, he's got some weapons. Now you just have to protect them. So, again, middle of the road. I don't think Washington was exceptional, partly because they didn't have a first-round pick. But for what they had, I think they did fine.
Can I tell you this? I got to share this. They knocked it out the park. My Pittsburgh Steelers, right, Hank said it on Friday, you can't question them when they get a linebacker. But I think Ryan Shazier out of Ohio State is perfect for them. But to get the speedster, Dree Archer, I think, you know, running the 4.26, almost getting Chris Johnson's record, I think a little third down scat back is perfect. But to get the big guy from Notre Dame, not Nick, but Stanley Tuitt, that was huge. I think that will help us. You know, Kiesler's retiring. I think we need that. But then, you know, I love getting a wide receiver, a big boy, 6'4", Martavius Bryant, who was a beast with Sammy Watkins at Clemson. I think that is going to be one of the steals of the draft. I love Tuitt, and I love Bryant. I think the Pittsburgh Steelers had a great day.
I think that they needed to address their offensive line, though. They picked up somebody.
No, we've already done it over the years. We talked about that last year with David Shaw. We got the Stanford kid. We got the Ohio State kid in Adams. And we've got Ponce. We've got some offensive linemen.
What about at corner, where we both thought that they would take Dennard? And you guys need some youth and some help in the secondary.
Yeah, they drafted a corner later on. Yeah, we'll see how it works out. I think, you know, and talking about corners that you know, could have made the first round but, you know, dropped down, like the little kid from the Chargers got, Jason Verrett. I thought the Chargers had a pretty solid draft, you know, and getting some
is that
you
any
know, guys in the trenches.
Dan Verrett from ESPN? No, just kidding.
Well, listen, our friends to the show, I mean, we're great on NFL Network. You know, we've obviously, you know, they had their broadcast and we're watching them, and David Shaw and Charles Davis were great on the broadcast, breaking down the draft like Mike Mayock always, you know. But we've, you know, had those guys on the show and the Stanford guys. And listen, you know, we know Stanford has a strong program. Were you surprised that Gaffney dropped down so far? And I think I forgot where he got picked up, but I think it's a great choice. And then the big offensive lineman, I like Yankee going to the Vikings. I thought that was, you know, a good pickup for them. And where did Gaffney go? I forgot where he went, but he's got a chance to be a good backup running back. And I love the Rams, Trey Mason. That's my guy. Plug four, right? Shout out to De La Soul. Rams having Zach Stacy with Trey Mason, Ray. Watch out for the Rams, baby. NFC West.
Except the only problem is they're playing in the wrong neighborhood. The three teams ahead of them are just really good teams. And Arizona, nobody's talking about them. At 10-6, they had a great year. By the way, your boy Tyler Gaffney went in the sixth round.
Yeah, that was low.
204 to the Panthers.
Yeah, I tweeted that out because I thought that he will add to that. You know, they already got three running backs, but those guys are getting a little long in the tooth. I think Gaffney is a perfect fit and can, you know, catch the ball. He can run it. That was good for Cam, and they got him Kelvin Benjamin. So they got Cam some weapons, the Panthers, you know.
Oh, wow. All right, well, you know what? I think we might have to wrap up our NFL draft coverage.
Oh, yeah.
And make that transition to the NBA.
Well, you know what? The proper way to say goodbye to the NFL and to transition is with a little bit of flavor from Ray and Tay. You know what I mean? We need some beats. Let's talk NBA playoffs. We'll be back in 2 seconds. Ray and Tay, NFL draft review. Great job with Randall Cunningham. Let's talk the playoffs.
way before the start. All right, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen, we're back to talk NBA. And first thing we have to do is bring you the breaking news in the NBA that the underachieving Cleveland Cavaliers, a team whose roster I loved going into the season and actually thought that LeBron might even love in the next year or two, they fire, after one season, again, they fire their coach, Mike Brown. So that's hot off the presses. And it looks
well,
like
it's because
be
Mark Jackson is available, and I believe they might go after Mark Jackson. I haven't read it anywhere. I just feel that they feel that Mark did wonders for Steph Curry, and I think Steph Curry has said that, and I think they want Mark to work with Kyrie, and I think Mike Brown didn't. He took this team backwards this year, and I think if the Knicks get Steve Kerr. And we'll, you know, talk about this and, you know, next, you know, coming shows. And we'll see if Van Gundy goes, you know, to the Lakers or to the Warriors. And, you know, there's some coaching, you know, it's a fight now for some of these coaches. I think the Cavaliers should and would hire Mark Jackson, and Kyrie and Johnny Manziel will tell LeBron, come back to Cleveland. We'll rock the town together. You know, and it's going to be on fire for the Cleveland Cavaliers. So we don't wish Mike Brown, you know, we don't wish him bad. You know, I think he's a good coach. I just think he's more of a defensive coordinator, assistant coach than a head coach. That's all.
Well, let's put it this way. If your theory is right, and why not shoot to get LeBron to come home, the coach you hire has to fit with LeBron, if you're trying to attract LeBron, right? Not only does your roster have to fit, but your coach has to fit with LeBron's style, because even though LeBron is still a relatively young man, he'll be going into his, 12th or 13th season, and he's not going to want to change his style to go play for a new coach. So this coach has got to be in sync with LeBron from day one. So I don't know if that's Mark Jackson or not, but I know that will be one of the hiring criteria for the Browns, for the Cavs.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's very possible. I'll tell you what's very possible is that the Spurs might sweep the Blazers, because, ladies and gentlemen, that bench and the three star veterans and Leonard are on fire. I mean, the way Tony Parker is playing, Tim Duncan, just, you know, big fundamentals, kissing it off the glass. It's such fun basketball to watch. You know, you have to get hyped up. You know, that finals last year was one of the best we've seen in a while, and we could be very well headed to seeing them play each other again. Spurs might get to rest, and OKC and the Thunder might go to seven games. What are your thoughts about what the Spurs are doing right now, man?
You know, the Spurs are an enigma, because you thought during the season they were the best team, and then you feared that they were getting old and the playoffs would catch up to them. Then those negative feelings and thoughts caught up to you when they played Dallas, right? Dallas gave them – Dallas, the 8 seed, who they beat 4-0, gave them too close a run for comfort. But in Game 7 – and probably, in Game 5, they started to click on offense. And when this team is clicking on offense, they've got guys like Patty Mills and Boris Diaw and, you know, complete Tiago Splitter and a bunch of role players doing their thing. So when the role players are playing great, then you know you still have to defend Parker, Duncan, Ginobili, and the up-and-coming Kawhi
Ginobili.
So that means that they really, at least on offense, don't have anybody you can leave alone. So, for example, when you play the Spurs, it's the exact opposite of Thunder, right? You're so scared of Westbrook and Durant because they're unstoppable, even two defenders. But you know that Perkins is really not an offensive threat. Cephalosha is not an offensive threat. Ibaka is decent on offense, but you're not scared of Ibaka putting up 30 on you. So here, what Popovich has turned this team into is just an offensive machine, a juggernaut. And these guys are when they're on, they're hard to play. Now, which is not to say that, they're going to have a tough series in the winner of OKC, the Clippers. They may even lose that. They may not even get to the finals. So as good as they're looking, they may not even make the finals, especially if it's the Thunder. They just don't match up well against the Thunder.
Yeah, well, we'll see tonight. Does Brooklyn have another win in them? They look good on Saturday. Can they tie up the series and go back to Miami? Can they win and make it 2-2? I thought it was fascinating how they played. You know, it's about Joe Johnson and Darren Williams. If those guys really take the lead, and then you have the solid veterans to follow, and then the role players, you know, Brooklyn's got a shot. I think Miami's going to wind up beating them. Probably, I said six originally, and I think it could stick to that. But what do you think? Can Brooklyn, you know, at least tie it up to go 2-2, or?
Well, Paul Pierce. There are reports now that Paul Pierce went to Jason Kidd and said, "Give me LeBron. I want to guard him all day, every day, up and down the court." So even though it's Joe Johnson,
it's all mental with these guys. I love it.
Yeah,
I love
it. Exactly. Even though it's Joe Johnson and Darren Williams, who you need productivity from that, you know, maybe the most expensive backcourt in the NBA. The heart and soul of that team is Paul Pierce, ultimately. And the way Paul Pierce guards LeBron, or at least checks LeBron, mans up to LeBron, might be the way that the Nets go. So can the Nets win another game? Yes. I do think, though, that Miami's just too tough. I mean, Miami's too athletic, and they have those three stars that you never have an answer for. Even though the Nets beat them twice without D. Wade, I don't know. I see the Nets having trouble in the playoffs knocking them off. So I like the Heat and six, so just like you.
Yeah. So let's go over to last night. I mean, look, we saw the Wizards and Pacers. You know, it turns out, you know, John Wall might have had a little injury to his eye, but that comeback by the Pacers was strong. And Paul George, it's like they've awoken the beast. You know, I guess no one's ever done this. 7 3-pointers, 39 points, 12 rebounds. Paul George had his best playoff game ever, and it was a perfect timing because the Wizards were well on their way to tying up this series. Now they head back to Indiana, and they have the opportunity to close out the Wizards, which would be huge in terms of them maybe getting some rest to get ready for Miami. Are the Pacers ready to – I mean, look, Hibbert found his game again, right? He went back home to Georgetown. He's from the area, played high school and college ball down there. You know, are they ready now? Are they alive? Are they awake? Evan Turner got a clutch basket. These guys might be ready to close them out. I thought the Wizards were ready, but some bonehead mistakes in the end of the game. You know, not setting solid picks, not getting the pass in, not getting the shot off. I was a little disappointed. What are your thoughts about the next game with Pacers-Wizards?
This team was dead, the Pacers. In the first round, they should have lost if Atlanta was a little bit better. Now, remember, Atlanta won 36 games, so they were a terrible 8 seed. But if they had played anybody a little bit better than Atlanta, they would have lost in the first round. But so is life in the playoffs. Win and move on. I think that this win last night saved Frank Vogel, saved Larry Bird, saved this team and this current franchise. They're going to win. Actually, I think they're going to lose the next game in Indiana, and then they'll win six in Washington.
That would be fascinating.
To the Eastern Conference Finals. And like they've worked all year long, they'll get the Heat, and they'll have games, you know, 1, 2, 5, and 7 at home. So they are exactly where they want to be if they can seal this deal. I like the Pacers to win this in six, though. I like Washington to win the next game. And I tell you what, Paul George.
Balling.
And
Paul Jizzy. Paul
George,
you know,
he made the Gatorade
doing it,
commercials and the Papa John's commercials. And he's out there doing his commercials, but he needs to do it.
Wait. I'm going to tell you the best commercial. Shout out to Richard Sherman with Stephen A. Smith. That's the best commercial. Sherman just got his payday, he did his Johnny Kemp, just got paid. Yo, but that's the best commercial out there right now. That and Kevin Durant taking off in the air with Sprint, with the family. That's funny.
But I think Paul George is really coming of age. I think last year was his coming out party. This is his, you know, welcome to stardom party. If he wins this round and can give the Miami Heat a run for the money again next year, or next round, and take them to seven games, the defensive job he did, you know, and the coach, Frank Vogel, said it great. He said, look, this guy scored 39 on 10 for 20 from the field, 7 for 10 from threes. Oh, and by the way, he had to chase Bradley Beal up and down the court all game. So it's not like he took a break on defense.
Nope.
This guy really, really delivered, and he played 46 minutes. He told the coach, no, I'm not coming out. In the post-game press conference, Vogel said,
well, that's what you want to see
out
from your star players. You know what I mean? That's what you have to see, and that's what we said. This playoffs, you know, will make or break some guys, and you need – and honestly, I'm going to say it tonight. Joe Johnson, you need to see that from him and Darren Williams. They need to play 40 minutes. They need to play 38 minutes, and they need to play some defense and score, you know? I mean, it's going to be interesting. It's all about Dwayne Wade in that series, too, his health in terms of how much they can, you know, dominate and win in five or whatever. So let's talk about the real series, right? We got the Sterling saga still, you know, brewing in the air. Clippers made the amazing comeback yesterday. A lot of people were turning off their TVs on Mother's Day if they had them on. Hope all the mothers out there had a great Mother's Day. The Thunder, I mean, the Clippers come raging back. Chris Paul plays one of the best. Yo, that's the Professor Chris, you know, Prince Paul, right? Chris Paul. And big win. They come back. They win, what was it, 101-99. Westbrook missed the
yep.
three.
What's
going to happen game five going back to OKC? What do you think with the rest of the series?
I think this game goes 1-1-1 and goes to game seven.
Yeah.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, if they lose this series, are going to shoot themselves because they were the better team for 46.5 minutes. And really should have won this game. The Clippers had no business winning this game. They should be down 3-1. But they didn't. They turned it around. Jamal Crawford had a couple of clutch shots. Chris Paul had a couple clutch shots. Durant had 40, but at the end, Chris Paul was giving him some trouble at 6
yeah.
feet. He was just making life a little difficult for him. Chris Paul is a pesky sort of thick 6-foot, you know, guard. Trying to guard the unguardable 6'10 with the 7'6.
Don't take away nothing from that man. Don't they list him as 6'1? Let him get his 6'1 with the sneakers on. Come on, man.
Oh, my fault. What about the afro? 6'5, 6'9 with the afro. Go to Fletch for all you young kids out there. Go watch Fletch.
Yeah. No young kids, right? You don't know the reference? Go watch Fletch. That is a movie.
Oh, my God. But I think this one goes 7. I think this is a coin flip, and it goes 7.
It goes 7, yeah. You know what's so funny, though? I got to tell you, Westbrook is one of the most fascinating players we might ever see in NBA history because in one game, from one moment to moment, you could be like, no, don't do that. Pass the ball. Stop. Da, da, da. And the next minute you're like, oh, my gosh, did you see that dunk? Or, oh, my
NBA
goodness, did you see the move, the three, the tip in? This kid's amazing, Westbrook, man.
You know what? We should dedicate a segment to to Russell Westbrook. Just all the adjectives you can describe him. You know, great, exciting, fantastic. But then you could also say frustrating, hair scratching. What are you doing? Remember how Magic killed him last year in the NBA playoffs, or 2 years ago, what he said.
Yeah,
he was the worst
ago,
point guard of the NBA.
He shouldn't be shooting more than Durant. And we hear it all the time, but you know what? You only got two real scorers on that team.
Yep.
And, yeah, Reggie Jackson can score 30, but that might be, you know, once in the whole playoffs. So, you know, this is what it is. So before the show ends, let's touch on it. I guess we've got to end on a sour note. You know, tonight Anderson Cooper with Sterling, the wife met with Barbara Walters, the NBA, the players are saying, Magic said no players are going to play for any Sterlings. I really almost don't want to sit down and even listen to what Sterling has to say. You know, he's saying, oh, he was distraught and emotionally distressed. That's why it took him so long to come out to talk to Cooper. But I think where he got himself in trouble in the little excerpts they're releasing, oh, one mistake in 35 years. Homeboy, you got more than one mistake in 35 years. Right there, everyone's like negative and they don't want to hear it. So to me, that right there just puts a bad taste in your mouth. And I think, like you said the other day, Dick Parsons took over from Citigroup or – So it's going to go to the courts, but the NBA is going to wind up winning, I think.
Look,
they're going to have to sell
it. This is going to be dragged out because these two apparently are willing to sue Donald Sterling and his wife, and they're willing to go fight this. And they also have this extra ploy that when they get divorced, if and when they get divorced, the other half can say, well, wait a minute, I can still own the team. So this might be tied up in court, and you know, the court system trumps the NBA, so the state laws in California, and then ultimately going all the way up potentially to the Supreme Court. This might be tied up in court. So hopefully it gets resolved sooner than later.
Before the season starts,
because
it could get ugly, Ray. It could get ugly. They're not going to play for her. I'm telling you.
I have a bad feeling it won't get resolved, though. It'll be Dick Parsons basically convincing people to play, because this will not be resolved by, you know, when does the NBA season start? Around Halloween. So end of October, early November, this won't be resolved by then. The court system doesn't move fast enough.
Well, I wonder if the NBA lawyers and their bylaws, if they can, you know, maybe there's some sort of way to, you know, talk to the Sterlings behind the scenes. And when these owners, you know, get the vote, this vote needs to happen soon, though. I got to tell you that.
Well, the
this
vote,
of the owners.
I believe it'll be 29-0 if they release it. And if they don't release it, it might be a little less than that. But I do believe it'll be 29-0. My only concern is that the actual transfer of ownership won't happen anytime soon. I just think that the court system, this will be bogged down in the court system. The one thing that's ironic here is that every day that they hold on the Sterlings, the value of the franchise goes down. So if you're rational and you're trying to talk to them and say, hey, you know, you're eventually going to be out, you might as well sell now sooner than later so that you maintain, you know,
as much money
as
possible.
They're not taking
this. If you sell today, you might get $800 million. If you hold on and get more people to boycott and get more negativity and more sponsors bouncing, then you might go to $600 million. You know what I mean? You could lose $100 million. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, well, we had a great show. Randall really delivered the goods. Thank you so much to Chappie and to Randall and to Tay for making it happen. We had a blast.
Nah, Derek stepped up for us, man. Shout out to Derek Chapman. You know, people need to get at him. And what is it? The Beat Bakery at, I think it was, what's his email? The Beat Bakery at Gmail or Yahoo or something.com. So check out Chappie, Derek Chapman. He, you know, he made it happen for us. And, Pastor Steve and Pastor Randall Cunningham. It was a great interview, fascinating. He's a great guy, man. He really seems just like a, you know, that's my quarterback, yo. That's my quarterback. Imagine Randall with T.O.
He was talking about Randall 10 years earlier, 15 years earlier.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Hey, you know, I got to say this, though, real quick. I'm glad this guy came back. He had the horrible injury, Aroldis Chapman for the Reds. He came back, so good for him, because he got hit pretty hard with that baseball, you know. And
in the minor leagues, he was topping 101 on the radar gun.
Yeah, and the big guy who's on my fantasy team, Clayton Kershaw, is back looking good. And the Yankees, man, Sabathia.
Went on the DL, yeah.
Yeah, Sabathia's on the DL. That's Yankees are rough. So we'll talk
about
it. We'll be back.
In the future, yeah. We'll be back on Friday. Yeah. I said we'll talk more baseball in the future. We'll be back on Friday to give you some
and let's
more.
Let's give hockey some quick love. The Rangers force a game 7. Remember I told you they'd win. And the Bruins, who I picked as well, they're looking like they might take care of the Canadiens. So a little playoff hockey. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, we got LA and Anaheim tied up. We've got Chicago looking like they might win. I mean, they got to go into Minnesota, but looking like they might win. So, yeah, we've got some good hockey talk. We'll get into it on Friday. We'll catch up on baseball and hockey. Feel like we've neglected them a little bit. But we had a great show talking football, talking NBA, talking draft, and talking sports with friends.
Great show. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on Friday. Go check us out, rayandtaytoday.com. Also, check us out at theurbandaily.com, Ray and Tay Today. We're out. Thanks to Randall.
Peace.
Hey.